Hello, airport industry folks. Welcome to the AX Insider Podcast, and thank you for tuning in. I'm Andy Telejohn, the senior writer at Airport Experience News. This podcast will be one part of our 20 Years, 20 Voices series, celebrating the upcoming 20th AX Conference. And during these calls, we've been talking with industry veterans who've overseen the evolution of the concessions industry over the last two decades and change. Today, we're talking with Eric Johnson, Director of Commercial Management and Airline Affairs at the Metropolitan Airports Commission, which oversees the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport. Eric, thanks for taking some time to join us. You've been at the airport much longer than just the two decades, 33 years, I understand it. So you've seen this evolution take place pretty much from beginning to end so far.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Mindy. It's been a wild ride, I would say. You know, it's every day I go into work, I always think, at what point in your career do you like? I always kind of gauge myself based on, oftentimes I will have things that will come up, like leases that will come up, and I'll think back to when I initially started them, and thinking back at the time of, oh my God, I'm signing a 20-year lease deal. I'll never be here when this gets to the end of this lease. And now I'm already starting to roll over some of those leases, wondering where all the time went.
Yes, 20 years does get to be a long time. A lot of these deals you're talking about, nobody will do 20 years anymore. So that's just one amongst many of the changes that have taken place over the years. Commercial management and airline affairs, that's a pretty broad swath. You've basically overseen everything that has anything to do with generating money for the MAC?
Pretty much. I often tell people that if you think about it as anything that makes money at the MAC, with the exception of parking and taxi cabs, I pretty much get involved in some way, shape, or form.
Oh, you get to avoid the parking and taxi cabs, huh?
Yes, that is out of my jurisdiction, and I've never complained once about that.
Well, fair enough, and we'll leave the taxi cabs out of this one then. We're primarily looking at the concession sides of things with these conversations, and at 33 years with the MAC, you have probably seen it all. I hear a lot of people talking about hot dogs spinning on racks and generic pizza. What do you remember about those early days and what concessions looked like back then?
Yeah, well, and the funny thing is even before my career at the MAC, my dad was in the aviation industry. He worked for North Central Airlines, and then that transitioned into Republic. And so even growing up as a kid, I remember going to MSP. I remember walking through the airport, seeing those types of things. I can still picture some of the old concession stands, and exactly just like you said, the rotating wheel of hot dogs like they used to have in movie theaters too. And they had the one, well, before it became the main mall at the airport, the center court of the airport terminal there. I remember they had the one place called the Garden Restaurant. I don't know if you can get more generic in terms, but it was just a sit-down restaurant, which was kind of unusual at an airport. And it was the white tablecloth and trying to be a more fancy environment, but very generic in the way of food offerings and things like that. But just some of those pictures and things that I remember just growing up as a kid and walking through and seeing what was happening at the airport at that time.
So what started to change that? I got the sense that, I've been writing for AXN and Airport Revenue News before that for about 18 years now. And the change had started to take place. And MSP was certainly among the first handful of airports to start moving in a different direction with that. But what did finally start moving the needle in terms of making things a little more interesting and a little more, customer friendly?
Yeah, so when I first got started at MAC, I initially started out in the noise department. And then in 1992, I transitioned into what at the time was called properties. And I was working with Gordy Winterstrom, who was one of the managers at the time. And shortly after that, he became the director of the department. And so in the early 90s is really when I think the big change started to occur in airport concessions. And I remember one of the things that they went through in doing one of the rebids at the airport. And at the time, he was working with a consultant by the name of Shelley Clapper. And he was, I think, one of the former Portland Airport concession managers there. And the two of them were working on what was, you know, at the time, a very cutting edge idea of starting to bring name brand operators into the airport and, you know, asking the question, you know, we see, you know, brands and things like that in shopping malls. Why can't we see them in the airports? And started talking to some of the operators about the idea of bringing recognized brand names into the airport. And that was really kind of the kickoff of that part of the industry of kind of going down that path. And, it, you know, during that process of the redevelopment of the program at MSP, Gordy and also at the time we had Joe Anderson, who had started at the MAC. And Joe was a very creative entrepreneur who had done several personal businesses that he had developed. He'd come up with the concept of the store Kitchen Windows, which started in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. And he had some really creative ideas of, you know, they started coming up with this idea of, well, why can't we create a mall in the center of the airport? And we've got all this square footage and we can start to do things about, you know, changing the look and feel of how these concessions look. And, you know, Joe was always very creative about the storefronts and trying to come up with dynamic things that would catch people's attention going through the mall. And I remember one of the retail stores they had, they worked with Carol Howe, who was one of the iconic operators at the time, who was really looking to get creative in some of this stuff. And they had created this this fake moose statue that was split in half by the storefront window. So half the moose was outside of the glass of the storefront and the rest of it was in the store. And, you know, just some of these things that would, you know, get people to stop and be like, oh, my God, what's it here? And, you know, taking pictures of storefronts at airport concessions, which, you know, people had never done things like that before. But coming up with these things that would really catch people's attention and draw them into the store and really started to turn around the revenue generation of the concession units at the airport, I think, was one of the biggest eye-opening things to, you know, this creativity and bringing some of these new ideas to life.
So the money piece of it changed pretty quickly then.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay. You've thrown out a couple names that were in my notes here. We were going to get to a couple of those folks for sure. But you know, you and I, you know, offline over the years have talked several of the stories. My introduction to the airport concessions realm wasn't with ARN, but at my previous job at the Minneapolis-St. Paul Business Journal in the early 2000s, when there was another one of these big overhauls going on, and I got to experience the whirlwind that was Gordy and Joe working together on an overhaul of the program together. And I was wondering if there were, you know, one or two, you know, stories or thoughts you've got on just what kind of take us behind the closed doors a little bit, if you could, and give a sense for, you know, how that tandem worked together and got so much done that did change the, because I mean, I know that Joe, I had in my notes here, Joe was big on pushing boundaries. Maybe you might have to take out some of the details that I've heard over the years, but talk a little bit about how that pairing worked so well.
Well, you know, Joe was definitely a high creative, high energy guy. He was not one to always understand or appreciate the boundaries of working in a government entity and what the process was involved in things about how you get leases changed or how you go through a bid process and things like that. And, you know, the two of them, I think, were a great combination in that, you know, Gordy was a very talented guy, you know, had a lot of respect with the organization and Mac. He was very dedicated to the process and making sure that, you know, bids were done in appropriate ways and following the guidelines and making sure everything was done with the letter of the lease and things like that. And Joe brought this creative whirlwind into the whole process. And, you know, I think the two of them played off each other an awful lot. And, you know, the funny thing back in the day was I had my office in between the two of their offices. And I often got to see, you know, some of the engagement that went on with them. You know, Gordy would come into Joe's office and, you know, they'd have a blow up about something that they were thinking about or an idea they were working on. And Joe had gone off down a different path and didn't necessarily run it by Gordy first. And Gordy would come in there and, you know, tell him, you know, I'm in charge here and, you know, this is going to be done the way I want it done. And he'd storm back to his office and then Joe would, a couple of minutes later, trot by my office and go right into Gordy's and slam the door. And the two of them would be yelling back and forth at each other. And Joe would walk out and he'd turn around and say, I'm going to be in my driveway at 5 o'clock tonight with a bottle of Chardonnay. And we're going to sit down and talk about this. And, you know, they would leave work and they would go somewhere else and hash out some of their issues. And, you know, it was that passion between the two of them that I think really kind of helped drive and develop the program into what it was. And I don't recall if MSP was the first airport to win the Griesbach Award, but I know they won one of the first Griesbach Awards that came out through ACI for the original development of the main mall program out there. And that goes to the heart of the two of them and what they really had this passion for, developing something that was really going to change the look and feel of what passengers coming through the airport would experience when they came to MSP.
Well, and as you walk through an airport today, I mean, anywhere in the country, I mean, you know, they've changed to you know, different degrees, but you know, the old you know the moose that's half inside and half outside the storefront. I mean, that's you know, today that would seem like small potatoes, but you know, back in the day, I mean, that I heard countless stories about how that moose was a contentious issue. So I'm curious if you could walk me through. So I mean, I know I'm not saying you don't have rules or anything like that, but what was the purpose of some of those rules in terms of just not being willing to bend on boundaries and storefronts and things like that back in the day? And then, you know, once folks started seeing the changes in what the airport looked like, plus the differences on the bottom line, how long was it before that started to catch on industry wide?
You know, I think that decade of the 90s was really the turning point of what was happening in the industry. And, you know, at the time, you know, MSP wasn't the only one doing some of these things. I can recall at the time, you know, Portland was one of the leading airports in cutting edge stuff. I know Dallas had always been recognized as doing some of those things as well. But it was very limited at the time of how many airports were doing that. And I think, you know, a lot of the whole issue about, you know, the changing of the look and feel of storefronts and things like that, you know, the experience that I had initially was, you know, a lot of the airport architects at the time were all about, you know, clean, straight lines. You didn't want to do anything that was going to disrupt the flow of passengers walking through the airport. And, you know, the idea of, you know, we're an airport, all we're here for is to get people from the parking lot through ticketing to their gate on an airplane and out of here. And when they come back, they just need to go straight to bag claim and get out of here. Why are we trying to do something that disrupts that flow? And I don't think it was until, you know, some of this started happening and the airport industry started to get the sense for, you know, people have a lot of dwell time when they get to airports and they need something to do with that time other than just sit at the gate and at the time, you know, read a newspaper, you know, something you don't see anymore. But, you know, that was kind of the big thing. And so when they started coming up with some of these ideas, you know, this whole sense of creating something that was going to catch people's attention and get them to walk in a store and, you know, fine tuning exactly what kind of things you're curating within a store that, you know, creates a sense of place. And, you know, that sense of place thing wasn't as big a thing at first as just kind of, you know, catching people's attention. But then I think as it started to evolve, it was, you know, how do we differentiate ourselves from any other airport? Or how do you let people know they're in Minneapolis, St. Paul versus, you know, Lincoln, Nebraska or wherever else? And starting to come up with some of that creativity of how do you bring the sense of Minnesota into the airport so people recognize that's where they're at and how do we make ourselves different from any other airport that they're in? And I think that's where, you know, Gordy started a relationship with, you know, operators like Carol Howe, who, again, was somebody who was, you know, super creative in the industry, had some really cutting edge ideas. And she started coming up with some of these concepts that were very focused on Minnesota or the, you know, the lakes atmosphere and things like that, that started to transition into how some of the news and gift concepts and the specialty retail pieces looked in the airport. You know, and then it started to shift into, you know, the food and beverage and how can we get, you know, local restaurant operators to be able to bring a concept into the airport. And I think that part took a lot longer just because, you know, the whole concept of, you know, establishing a partnership with some of the prime operators. You know, the primes, I think, still had a desire to do proprietary brands just because it was more money to them out of the process. But, you know, starting to push the envelope of trying to get recognized brand names, whether those were national brands or local brands. You know, initially, I think at first it was more national brands that you saw in the airport. But then again, that whole push of trying to develop a sense of place, that's really what started pushing it down towards more of local concepts being able to come into the airport. And that, I think, is part of, you know, what really started to make some of the transition into what you see today.
Okay. Now, there's a couple things. We're talking with Eric Johnson, the director of commercial management and airport affairs at MSP. You mentioned some of the partnerships, and Carol Howe was certainly a name in my notes here. There were a lot of you had a lot of partners over the years that you know, that have contributed quite a bit to the evolution of MSP over the years. You also mentioned some of the partnerships with primes, and you mentioned at the beginning the 20-year contracts that have started to expire. And another thing that that, you know, seemed to change quite a bit in the years that I've been watching over is the length of some of these contracts. It used to be the one prime operator would have the whole program for 20, 25 years, and the terms got shorter and the competition got greater. And what kind of an impact did that have on making some of these changes take effect as well?
Yeah. You know, for example, MSP, I mean, for a long time, we were a very, I would say Host was probably our biggest operator at the airport for quite a number of years, probably 20 plus years. And, you know, there's a lot of positives. You know, when you have a time period like that, you definitely establish a really strong relationship with some of the operators. But I think it wasn't until, you know, you started to see some of the changes in the industry and the idea of, you know, a shorter term gives you the opportunities to continue to create and evolve your program over those terms. And I know when we, when I myself started getting involved in it, you know, 10 years was really more of kind of the mindset of most of those contracts. And even in some cases, even less than that in some cases. And it was always that kind of that balance of talking with the operators of, you know, what were we requiring them to build out in the space, and what did they need as far as term to be able to recover that investment and still make, you know, a reasonable profit over that term and working through some of those things. You know, I think that long period that Host was the major operator at MSP, it was a very lucrative program for them. But again, as the program started to evolve and you started seeing the need for coming up with new and different things, you know, you can't always depend on one operator to bring the newest, best concept to you. And so I think once that started to happen, that's when we started to see the idea of, well, we don't necessarily need one prime at the airport. We can have multiple primes at the airport. And that develops a sense of competition within the airport. And then you start, you know, feeding off of each other of how can we improve our concept to get people in here versus another operator next door. And, you know, how do you go about doing that? And how do you work with the airport to really establish that partnership to work to a point that, you know, everything that they're doing is profitable and makes sense for them and is achieving the goals of the airport.
How many operators do you have overseeing your concessions program now?
Oh boy, that's a great question. You're going to ask me that. You know, I think we have just about every prime we have in the industry. Pretty close. You know, we've got, we still have Host. We've got SSP. We have Arius, who's one of our bigger operators today. We have OTG. We've got Delaware North. We've got Hudson. We've got Paradis. So, I mean, it's, we've got a pretty extensive swath of prime operators at the airport right now, probably even more than I've seen in the entire time period I've been at MAC. It's just kind of evolved into that over the period of time.
How do you stay ahead? I mean, and we mentioned, we talked about Joe and Gordy, but you've, you know, Isabella and Matt and Liz Jakoviak over the years, you've had some creative and great staff to work with, but how do you keep staying ahead of things? You know, MSP has continued to win awards on a regular basis for the concessions program, for various aspects of it, different concepts, different design strategies. How do you stay ahead of things now?
Yeah, I mean, I would say we've been really lucky over the years. You know, first of all, for the staff, I mean, I've really been blessed by some of the people that I've got working for me. Over the years, one of the things that I started to do when I got to the point of being in charge of the concession program was, rather than look for people who had airport experience, I always tried to find people who had industry experience. And, you know, Liz was probably one of the first ones who kind of came along in that process. And, you know, she had an extensive background in food and beverage. She had done restaurant development. She had worked for an entrepreneur doing a lot of that type of stuff. And, you know, she came in and she was like, I don't know the first thing about airports. And I was like, that's okay. You know, we can teach you the airport part of things. I need you to be the creative mindset of coming up with what we're going to do with the concession program. And when she came on board, I told her, I said, you know, MSP had won the Richard A. Griesbach Award, you know, years ago. I said, I want to win that award again. And so we kind of set out on this path of what we needed to do to change the program again and go through a new evolution of doing that. And, you know, again, you know, the staff part, you know, the unfortunate thing was, and I totally understood, you know, Liz made her decision to go off and work in the concession industry, which I totally anticipated from the day she started. I mean, she was a creative whirlwind. I always saw that she was, you know, super energetic, always looking for new things to change, and kind of had some of that same spirit of Joe Anderson, you know, not wanting to be bound by some of the bureaucratic process at the airport. And so when she came in and told me that she was leaving to go work in the concession industry, I wasn't surprised. I mean, it was a tough loss, but the amazing thing was, you know, over the years we had also built up the team, and going back to that thing of looking for people who had experience out in the industry, and Isabella, who you mentioned, we had recruited her from the Mall of America, where she had had her experience, as well as having a family that did their own business, running jewelry businesses and other things. And so, again, somebody with a very creative mindset, and she was able to step into Liz's shoes and really take off from that point. And so, again, I've been super lucky with some of the team members we've had, and we continue to look for people with that industry experience who can bring that to the program. Again, you know, we can teach anybody the airport side of things, but having somebody who can bring some of those ideas and really push the boundaries of what airports do and what can be available in an airport, I found that to be the most valuable piece of, you know, picking teammates coming forward. And then as far as the process goes, we put a lot of time and effort and energy into getting ready to go out to do a rebid. I mean, we take a look at all of the previous award winners of the past year to see what kind of things they've brought at other airports. We do benchmarking tours where we go out and we will tour, you know, 10 to 14 airports who we kind of view as who's really doing some of the coolest things in the industry. And we will go out and tour those airports, talk to the staff, talk about their lessons learned, what worked, what didn't work. And then we come back to the airport and we go through this litany of all of the materials that we collected on that tour. And we talk about, you know, what do we think out of what we saw would work here? What's the next phase of something that's happening out in the industry? And we put a lot of time and effort into that. And, you know, the one thing I always love about this industry is everybody's willingness to share and be open about kind of what they do and what they're offering. And, you know, there's a lot of pride when you go out and meet with these airports and you tour through, and, you know, people love to show off what they've done with their programs. And I think that is one of the best things about this industry, because that to me is what really helps us continue to grow and evolve and establish new ideas coming into that. And, you know, even going through COVID and everybody getting together and talking about what were we doing to support the tenants and who had, you know, a great idea of something that somebody else didn't think of, and what kind of things could we do to help with logistics and hours of operation and things like that. And it's that openness and idea gathering of this industry that I really think helps to grow and continue to develop and evolve. And, you know, those are the things that I think have always helped to make us successful, and never being afraid to try something that hasn't been tried before. You know, there's any number of concepts that we've had over the years that we tried and failed, but we never walked away saying we were sorry we didn't try it, just because, you know, sometimes you think you have a great idea, it looks great on paper, and then you put it in place and you realize that people don't take to it as much as you thought they were going to, or else there's something else that's come along since the time of developing that. You know, I think that's one other aspect of it too, is, you know, we have a very, I like to think that we have a very open communicative relationship with our tenants. And we always tell them, you know, if something isn't working or not performing to the level that you want it, let's talk about it. Let's figure out what's wrong. We are more than happy to provide our feedback and ideas over the years of our understanding of the airport and the flow of passengers through the airport. But we're always willing to talk to the tenant about, well, you know, what are your thoughts? Is there something else you would rather put in here? We are always okay with somebody if they wanted to reconcept something and do something else. And, you know, if we think it's a great idea that's going to work, we'll be very supportive in doing that, taking it to our board. You know, sometimes that means you have to add some additional term to make something like that happen. And I think that flexibility and being able to, you know, shift things even in midterm of an agreement To us, that helps to always have a component of the program that's turning over and bringing fresh new ideas into the mix so that it's not a 10-year time period of all the same stores in the airport. You always have opportunities where you can switch things out during that time frame and bring something new and different before you get to the next big redo of a program.
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting what you were saying there about other airports being willing to kind of collaborate on this kind of stuff. Because I mean, it's not like you're competing for the same traveler with Dallas or whatever. You're more of an extension of each other than competitors in some ways. In that, if a passenger has a crappy experience somewhere, they're going to blame the airport or the airline or whoever in general. So the more it seems to make sense to me that the more everybody can help improve the experience for passengers along the way, all the better for the industry as a whole.
Well, I would argue even that there are times where we are competing for the same passengers, because passengers often have their choice of, if they have to do, you know, multiple stops on a flight, they've got choices of where they can go to. And, you know, especially being in the middle part of the country, you get a lot more of that than you probably do on the coastal airports. And so even though there is that sense of competition, I've always been blown away with people's willingness to share and talk about things and, you know, share their copies of their agreements and what newest and best things have they come up with. And I think that collaboration, I mean, you know, we all go to these industry conferences like AXN, for example, and we love to compete for awards, and everybody loves to win and do things like that. But at the same time, I think everybody's usually very happy for the people who win. Sure, there's times where you think, oh my God, we should have won that. But you know, you move on, you go to the next opportunity that comes up, and you grow from it. And that's just, I think, the amazing thing in this industry is just that collaboration.
Your trophy cases are plentiful at the MAC there, Eric. Share the wealth. Eric Johnson, Director of Commercial Management and Airline Affairs at the Metropolitan Airports Commission, overseeing Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport. Eric, we've talked a lot about the past and how this industry has evolved. What are one or two things that that you see happening over the next 5, 10, 20 years? How are we going to evolve further? And whoever is doing these 20 voices interviews in 20 years when I'm long gone, what are they going to be talking about?
Wow, that's a pretty wide swath. You know, obviously right now, one of the biggest challenges I think the airport industry is facing is the staffing of the concession operations. Coming out of COVID, that was a huge challenge, and trying to get people to return back to work. We went through a time period for a couple of years where, we were having a pretty significant impact on our hours of operation just because we had challenges with getting people to come in and work shifts at the airport. And even now that we're kind of past the pandemic issue, you know, there's still some of those remnant pieces that are hanging on. I'm trying to get employees to work late at the airport, later shifts, and you know, up to the full hours of operation continues to be a little bit of a challenge. We have done more than what we have done in the past as far as helping the concessionaires with job fairs at the airport. The airport picks up the cost of doing all the advertising and marketing for that. We work with the tenants to make sure that they are bringing their best foot forward when they're showing up at job fairs, having promotional information at the table. You know, part of the thing that we always forget too, you know, we get so wrapped up in, you know, us working in this industry, but, you know, when you're trying to get people new coming into this job market, they don't necessarily understand how that whole process works, that, you know, SSP or HMS host or whichever prime you want to talk about, they go into an airport and they see these brands and stuff, and they don't understand that there are different companies behind some of these things. And so that education process to, you know, when we have one of our primes with their table at the job fair, we always tell them, make sure you have some signage that shows the brands that you operate so that people understand that that's you and not just necessarily looking for a particular brand where they want to work at. So helping them get over that part of it. You know, the other part, the flip side of that is the efforts towards automation and what kind of things are we doing at the airport to create opportunities where if staffing is a challenge, what can we do technology-wise to make things easier for the traveling public? We have been working a lot on the digital ordering platform. We had worked with, for a time period, we struggled with trying to come up with what app would we have for the airport for doing ordering. And we've gotten kind of more of the generic, you know, the airport and making sure that we have QR codes throughout the airport. So passengers, if they're looking for something to eat, they can scan a QR code and find out how they can order something and swing by and pick it up at the location and not necessarily stand at a queue line and waste valuable time that, you know, they're waiting for a connecting flight or something else. That whole automation piece, it's really a fine line because as much as we would like to try to streamline and automate the process to make it, the whole process of ordering food or getting a product go as quickly as possible, you can't ever lose that human touch because there's always going to be people who still want to have somebody talk to them and be able to share an experience with or hear what's going on locally and things like that. And so we are working really hard on our next generation of concession leasing to make sure that we're in connection with what the operator wants to do and that they can't just make a decision to go totally automated on a process and lose that human touch. They need to work with the airport to figure out what that balance is so that you can always have different experiences that you make available for the traveling public. I think that is also one of the things that people are always looking for, you know, what kind of things sets your airport off from somebody else. And we've done, you know, over the years, we've always had like, music programs at the airport and art programs. We've done a lot more with art at the airport. We are looking hard at new passenger experience ideas at the airport. We have a golf simulator in the main mall of the airport that, you know, some people don't even recognize is there. And then when they realize it, they're like, oh, my God, I've never even thought about that. And they go up and they try it out and they have a great time doing it. And so those unique things at the airport, I think, are what people are going to be really looking for. I think there's also a push more for common use lounges at the airport. There are certain people, you know, Delta has been a great partner. They've established some really exceptional, they just opened a brand new lounge space at the end of our G concourse. That's a beautiful space. They've got an outside patio. They've got, you know, multiple food options and things like that. That works well and great for, you know, some of the premier Delta travelers, but then there are also a lot of other people looking to have a similar type of experience that may not necessarily qualify for that level of experience with Delta. And so we've had a common use lounge at the airport. As we continue to grow and get ready to rebid, I think that's one of the things that we're going to look at is, you know, is there a bigger, better partnership for common use lounge at the airport that we may be able to take advantage of? And the other thing is, I think just this, I've really been watching with interest. I think it was Raleigh Durham had recently established this ghost kitchen concept. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an interesting idea. The idea of being able to have multiple brands kind of behind the wall that aren't necessarily, you know, having big storefronts or anything like that, but brands that you can make available to the traveling public that they can order online for and have similar things like Amazon, where you know you walk up and you get a QR code and your little locker opens up and your order's inside there. Some of those things I think are really interesting, and you know, the one thing it's when you end up in these gaps where you have the long gaps of before you do a major rebid, it's always interesting to take that time period to kind of reflect of what's going on, what are some of the new cutting edge things, and how or are you even able to incorporate some of that in the next time you go through and do a rebid. And so that is part of kind of what we're at right now, where we're looking to see what kind of things are happening out there, what can we incorporate in the new space. We're going to have a bid coming out for our Terminal 2 facility next year. And the Terminal 2 facility is a very different animal than Terminal 1 in that it's more of the low-cost carriers. It's people who tend to be more leisure travel. So you have to have a very different look at some of the things that you offer there that you may not necessarily do at Terminal 1 or maybe to a lesser degree at Terminal 1. So okay. Thinking through some of those things is part of, I think, the big challenge and looking forward to the future and what kind of things you want at the airport.
Okay. Sounds good. I still haven't taken a crack at your golf simulator yet. Brings up the question, if you shank a drive on a golf simulator, can you still break a window? And
not in our units, no.
Okay, well, I'm...
You should be safe, Andy.
Should be safe? Okay, well, I'll have to check that out the next time I'm there. Eric, thanks for taking some time. Is there anything you want to hit on that we haven't talked about?
I don't think so. You talked about my time period in the industry, and you know it always surprises me every day. When people ask me how long I've been there, I always kind of pause, because even though I've been there for over 30 years, I never feel like that. It's such an exciting industry. There's so many great people that we've worked with at not only at our airport but throughout the industry. Just finding ways of letting other people know outside of the airport industry what a great career it is and what a unique business it is. I always find it interesting, the people who do come into this industry from somewhere else and then they never leave. They may go and work for different companies or whatever, but they stay in that industry just because it's such an exciting and dynamic industry with all of the changes. There's definitely challenges that occur, significant ones at times and lesser ones other times, but it always keeps you coming back. Every day is a different adventure. You never know what you're going to walk into. And that's, you know, part of the unique and exciting thing, I think, that has always kept me there. And I can't say enough about it.
Yeah, no doubt. And MSP has definitely been one of the leaders in that over the years. Thanks for taking some time, Eric. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks, Andy.